This is Robert Loeffler, and I am interviewing this afternoon Mr. Andy Munn, who is a resident of Moorhead. And we're going to learn something about the Boy Scouts of America from Mr. Munn this afternoon. Well, Andy, everybody seems to know you by that name, so we'll be calling you Andy. Will you tell us something about your background? Where were you born, and when did you get here to Moorhead, and what did you do?
That's a very short story, Bob, because I was born in Moorhead.
Okay.
So I didn't come from any place.
All right, that's better. Go ahead then, and where did you, you went to schools here, grammar school and?
Catholic school to the 8th grade, Moorhead High School, then North Dakota State U.
All right, and then what business did you get into, Andy?
Got into the sheet metal contracting business. My father had started that back in 1925. And when I graduated from high school, I didn't finish out North Dakota State U. It was during the Depression. There were no jobs when you did finish, and I had a job to start with, so I thought I'd better take it.
Okay. So you never got a degree?
No.
That was too bad. You thought of going back? And
no, really didn't.
Okay.
I had one friend that I used to chum around with quite a bit that graduated electrical engineering, and I think he was third in his class, and he waited 2 years trying to find a job after he graduated, because he wanted to get married. And then he got a job working in the parts department at J.I. Case Company, and I didn't think graduation was that important to the job he had. He never did get into electrical engineering, because at the time the Depression was over with, they were hiring ones that were fresh out of school, not ones that had graduated 2-3 years before.
That's right. Yeah.
So I don't think it would have made much difference whether I had finished or not, as far as what I did.
Well, and you didn't get married right away either, did you?
Me?
Yeah. Were you young when you were married?
Me?
Yeah.
No, I was 50.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah. My wife had been married before.
Yeah, Ruth had been married before. Mm-hmm. All right, Andy. What can you tell me about the how and when you got involved in starting into scouting and when it began here in Moorhead and Fargo and so forth?
Well, I got involved because I was asked to be the scoutmaster down at St. Joseph's Troop 40 in Moorhead. And that was back in 1932. A couple years ago, I got my 50-year veteran's pin of being active in scouting. And I served at that for about 3 years. I'll tell you, Bob, I wasn't very popular when I first went down there because, first of all, I didn't know anything about scouting because I never was a Boy Scout.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, the scoutmaster ahead of me that had left was a hockey player. And I think that troop only met in the winter time when there was a hockey rink where Hornbacher's grocery store is now.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they played. They had a hockey team. They really didn't have a Boy Scout troop. Well, when I took over, I didn't skate hardly, and I didn't play hockey. And so I wasn't too popular to start, but it worked out.
Ah, good. Now, Andy, you said 1932. Was there a troop in Fargo before then?
Oh, yes. There was a number of troops. I think there was 5 or 6 troops in Moorhead at that time.
That time.
Sponsored by different churches. The American Legion had one.
Do you know the date of the earliest troop in Fargo or Moorhead?
Well, scouting started in 1910 in the United States. It was chartered on February the 10th, 1910, by the United States Congress.
Oh, I see.
And but it originated in England. And there was 3 people that were involved in organizing it in the United States. Lord Baden-Powell was the one that started it in England and about 1907. He had been an army officer in India, I think, for the British Army. And he found that the young people that came to serve in the army under him did not know how to live out of doors. And when he retired, that was kind of his project. He started what was known as a Boy Scout troop.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had couple of other organizations similar to that that had started in the United States, and there was three different people that were involved in that. Daniel Carter Beard was one of them, and I think that was the Sons of Daniel Boone, they called it. Mm-hmm. And then there was an Ernest Thompson Seton. And then there was a third one, there was William Boyce. The one I know more about is maybe William Boyce. He was a newspaper publisher. And he came over, he lived in this area where we are now for a while.
He, I see.
As a young fellow, came to Lisbon, North Dakota. And he started a newspaper and a printing establishment there.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't successful. And the last they saw him after a couple of years being there, he was walking up the tracks with his suitcase, leaving town. It was a financial disaster. Yeah. I think something happened to him as far as the business was concerned. I think they had a fire or something like that. And he left. Not very happy with the folks in Lisbon, because he left quite a few debts along with it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But he went on to become a successful newspaper man in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And he was visiting in England. And one night he was finding his way in the dark streets. And he stopped a young boy and asked this boy for direction. The boy said, well, it's kind of hard to tell you, but he said, I'll take you there. So he took him there. Well, then Boyce wanted to reward him a little, give him a tip for helping him out.
Yes.
And he wouldn't take it because he said he was a Boy Scout. That was his good deed.
Oh, interesting.
So Boyce got interested, and before he came back to the United States, he went and met somebody and connected with the Boy Scouts in England, and he brought the information and the program back to the United States.
Yeah, I see.
And then that's how scouting got started here. And now scouting is in every free country in the world.
Mm-hmm.
The only places you don't find scouting is where in the communist countries, because they become a young military type organization there, and that doesn't fit into the scouting program at all.
Okay, good. All right. What about the membership, Andy?
Well, nationally, there have been 75 million boys in scouting in the 75 years. This is our 75th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
It was February 10th.
Good record.
And at the present time, there are, last year, 5 million boys enrolled in scouting nationally.
Mm-hmm.
During the Vietnam War, it dropped down because uniforms weren't too popular, and the Boy Scouts do wear uniforms and other things. The program had a slump, but now it's coming back, and the last few years they've increased about 100,000 a year. So now they're serving 5 million boys in the United States.
How locally, many in this area, locally?
Locally, we have 4 different types of scouting. First, we have the Tiger Scouts. Now, this is a new program. It's for boys when they become 7 years of age. It's kind of an introduction to Cub Scouting.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
But it's a very loose, organized group. First of all, they don't have uniforms and all this type of thing. It's a neighborhood type of program, but just a few boys in the neighborhood together. It's not national yet, although it's spreading. We were one of the councils that were guinea pigs as far as trying this new program in the last 2 years.
Uh-huh.
And then we have Cub Scouts. And a boy has to be 8 years old, and he can be in scouting, Cub Scouting, until he's 10.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a family-sponsored type program.
What do you mean by family-sponsored?
They have a den master, a cub master, I mean, and he's in charge of the whole cub pack. But then they meet maybe once a month. But in the other weeks during the month, they meet with a den mother. So the mothers are involved in that particular program.
So they get exposed to both the mother and the father figure then.
So it's a family-oriented program. And the Boy Scouts are age 11 to 16. And that is, of course, has been the main program all the way through. And there, the scoutmaster is a male, and there's been some problems with that under some of this liberation, because we've been sued because some mother wanted to be the scoutmaster of a Boy Scout troop. But they figure in that age group, a boy needs a man connections.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have a program for older people, older boys. And that is co-educational. That brings in girls, too.
Oh, I see.
That's from 16 to 20. When a boy gets to be 16 years old, he's interested in girls. And so they have girls in that program.
Is that, do they have a special name?
They're Explorer Scouts.
Explorer, that's Explorer.
And the Explorer Scout is a career-ordained program. There are 119 different merit badges in the scouting program, and they all relate to some particular type of business or career or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they program that they work in. Some of them are specialized posts. We have, like in Detroit Lakes, we have a post sponsored by the police department. They wear uniforms that are similar to what the police wear, and they have, if they have a large, like the water carnival down there, and they need extra people to direct traffic and stuff, these boys help out.
Good.
We have law posts. We have medical posts. These are all specialized ones.
Yes.
If a person is interested in medicine, a boy or a girl, well, they can join a medical post, and they work with doctors, they work with hospitals, and they learn that something of that profession so they can find out whether this is what they want to do.
Oh, yes.
So that's what the Explorer program is.
Can that continue into college?
Or beg pardon?
Can the Explorer continue into college?
Up to 20 years old.
Up to 20 years old, yeah, up to your junior. Yeah.
Now, in Morehead, we have two of these Tiger units, and there's 24 members in it. We have five Cub Scout units, and three of those are sponsored by churches in Morehead, and one of them is sponsored, no, two of them are sponsored by PTAs or connected with a school. In scouting, we have eight troops, and that's approximately 140 boys.
Mm-hmm.
There was 130 Cub Scouts. And one of us, those are sponsored, six of them by churches and two of them by schools.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Explorer Post, we have three units. There are 60 members in it. And one of them is sponsored by business, one by church, and one by school. So it gives us a total of 18 units in the city of Morehead, and 355 members are registered in them, and involved with them as scoutmasters and assistant scoutmasters and troop committee, the district officers, and we have 135 adults that are registered and interested in scouting and working in scouting in Morehead.
Most of those are volunteer.
Yeah, well, they're all volunteers. I might mention in Holly, we're going to go out a little ways. We have scouting too in Holly and Barnesville and Glendon in Clay County.
Right.
Now, you mentioned whether they were volunteers. When you have a council like we have as an organization, we have some professional scouters. But scouting is a volunteer program. And the professional ones are the ones that keep us volunteers on the ball, I guess, and keep us working. And then it'll average out so that you have maybe one professional for about every 60 or 70 units.
Mm-hmm.
Our council here is maybe one of the largest area councils in the United States, in that we have 100,000 square miles.
And what does it encompass?
We have all the state of North Dakota. We have two counties in Montana and two in South Dakota and 17 in Minnesota. Now that is divided into 15 districts. And in each district, there is a field executive that works with the scouters and the troops in that area.
And he's salaried.
Now, those are professional jobs. And then in our office, we have a scout executive, and he has two assistants. One is program, and one is finance.
Okay. So. Now, if we can digress for a second, let's talk a little bit about your role in the scouting, and tell me some of the things you were telling me the other day in your living room, because I think people of the future will find that most fascinating. Tell me first about the offices you have held, and then some of those little incidents that took place and the trips on the trains and so forth.
Well, I started in scouting at 240 at St. Joe's, and I was scoutmaster there for 3 years. And then I got somebody to take my place, because in the meantime, after I'd been there about a year and a half or 2 years, there was a group of older scouts. The most of them were from Trinity Church in Morehead. And they wanted to start an Sea Scout ship, which was the older group like our explorers are today. They wanted to start a Sea Scout ship. The Rotary Club would sponsor it. They'd been trying to get registered for about 6 months, but the Rotary Club couldn't find a leader. And they had met the night before, and they had decided that they wanted me to be skipper. So they came over and told me about it the next day. Well,
you turned
I already
down,
had one unit was meeting on Monday nights, and they wanted to meet on Thursday nights. And I told them I would accept it temporarily until we could find a person to serve as skipper for that group, which is the same as being scoutmaster for a Boy Scout troop. Well, that lasted 6 years. And it turned out to be a wonderful experience. They were a wonderful bunch of kids. I think I had a total of 22 boys in there, and 17 of them were Eagle Scouts, which is extremely high because when you look at the number of boys that come into scouting each year, there may be one out of 75 or 100 that will ever make the rank of Eagle Scout. Mm-hmm. But I would say in our council, our average is about 5 times that. I think we have a good program, and the boys stay in scouting. And
interested in.
So we have about 5 times the normal average of Eagle Scouts in our council.
All right. What about some of these jamborees that you went to? What was the first one?
Well, to start with, the first jamboree was in 1937. It was in Washington, D.C. And I was asked to serve as the first mate, which would be the same as an assistant scoutmaster for a troop that would go from the region, a Sea Scout ship. That was the only one, only Sea Scout group that was going. It was a regional sponsored. And I got a call from a letter first asking me to serve. I didn't pay much attention to it. Times were a little tough and money was a little scarce. And so finally they contacted, I had three members of the Rotary Club that were on my Sea Scout ship committee. And they contacted one of them, and that was Jake Kiefer. And he was supposed to put the pressure on me a little bit to register. So he came over and told me the Rotary Club would pay half of my expenses if I would go. So I decided to go. And that was, really, that first jamboree was, you'd almost say it was a glorified sightseeing trip. It was held in Washington, D.C., and there's so many things to see in Washington. Mm-hmm. Actually, we didn't even do our own cooking. They had the Army in there doing the cooking for us.
Oh, uh-huh.
And we got our food all ready to serve. But we were...
All you did was sightsee, huh?
It was 40 boys in that. And every morning we went someplace, every afternoon we went someplace, and we really saw Washington, D.C. Well, then it was 13 years before they had another national jamboree like that. because the war came in between the World War. So the next one was at Valley Forge. And I served as the contingent leader for that one. We had four troops, so we had 160 boys to that, and we traveled by special train. And it was really, it's really something, Bob, to see 40,000 boys all in one camp, camping together. We built a city overnight, practically.
Yes.
You know, with a fire department, a police department, with a hospital, a doctor's, food suppliers, post office.
Mm-hmm.
Just had everything that a city of 40,000 people would have. And there are programs. There was a national program every other night. These jamborees lasted for 8 days. And normally the President of the United States is there because he's the honorary president of the Boy Scouts,
mm-hmm.
or maybe the vice president. So it one of the programs is a kind of a ecumenical religious type program because the Boy Scouting and the, all the denominations, the churches work real well together.
Mm-hmm.
And did you ever see 40,000 candles lit in one spot at one time?
No.
It's quite a sight.
That must have been marvelous.
But they're a great experience. I went to two others, one in Santa Ana, California, in which I had 660 boys for 23 days. It gets to be a... it's a wonderful experience. You know, when you get home, you're glad it's over with because the responsibility is something. When you got home, you got them all with you and everybody's in good shape.
Mm-hmm.
It's
and
a good experience.
You're thankful for that.
Then I was back to Valley Forge. Now they have these jamborees every 4 years. Mm-hmm. And I have served on the committee arranging transportation and camping equipment and all that for a number of the others. But after 4 years, I thought it was somebody else. Mm-hmm. Should have the opportunity, not my hogging all the opportunity of going to jamborees.
All right. Now, when you went back in the early days, where did you catch the train, and did you pick up other boys along the way from the train?
Well, the first one we picked up in about five different places. But after that, the other three that we traveled by train, now we go by air, mm-hmm. but the other three we traveled by train, which I was in charge of this group, I combined with the St. Paul Council. They had about 400 boys. I had 160 or more. That was enough for a special train. And we stopped a number of places on the way for sightseeing, besides attending the jamboree. One interesting thing, Bob, when they come in, used to come in by train, there was so many special trains that came in, like, to Philadelphia and to Santa Ana, California, that they allowed 15 minutes to unload a train. And they could, took 3 days working during daylight to unload the number of trains that came into those jamborees.
Fantastic.
And then they'd have to have buses there and everything to take mm-hmm. you to different places.
How many cars on the train, do you think?
How many what?
How many cars on a train, say, from Minnesota?
Well, with 160 boys, I usually had three cars and a baggage car. They had maybe seven, eight cars, St. Paul did.
Did you cook meals in the baggage car or something like that? Or how did
no,
you cook meals?
We ate in diners.
You ate in the diners.
It's kind of interesting.
Tell me about that. Yeah.
Well, to start with, I think, you know, people didn't travel on the train too much. I think maybe it was the first ride on a train for about 50% of the boys. And then, as far as eating in the diner, I don't think 5% of them have ever ate in a diner before. So, most of the time we had regular diners. There was one time when we were out in Santa Ana, California, that we had what they call Army camp kitchen cars. And there it was kind of served cafeteria style.
Mm-hmm.
Because the railroad didn't have enough diners to service
all
of these trains that were traveling. So we had diners going out, but coming back we had to use one of these Army kitchen cars. It was like a baggage car. I was pretty disappointed when I found out we were going to have to do that. I could think back when I was in the Army when I saw some of those kitchen carts. But this one ended up to be all polished stainless steel inside. It was real neat.
Well, what about this time when the steward in charge of the dining?
Well, that was on the way back from Santa Ana, California. Our special train started out in St. Paul. It stopped by the Legion Park where we were camped for 3 days as a preliminary camp training. Right here in Moorhead. Picked up our 160, and then we traveled the north coast going out. We went out to Seattle, but we made 3 stops before we got there. We were usually off the train sightseeing during the day, and we traveled at night.
I see.
And we'd make one long bed out of the whole railroad car. But on the way back, the special train ended in St. Paul, and they hooked our cars onto the back of the Western Star that comes in. It used to come in here about 1:30 in the afternoon. And the train was a little late getting going because they had to switch our cars onto the back of their regular train. And as soon as we got going, I went up to the diner, which they had put on to feed us, and asked them what time they were, how many they could seat, and what time we would start serving, so we'd be through by 1:30 when we got to Fargo. And this, I found out we had to have 3 seatings, and so I went up with the first group, and I sent for the second group, and then I ate with the third group. Well, the steward on the dining car came over and sat down with me when I was eating, and he was figuring out the bill that I had to pay him for our dinner. And, you know, he says, when they told me I was going to feed a bunch of kids today, he said, I almost called in and said I was sick and I wasn't coming to work. Because he said, I can see those biscuits flying from one end of the car to the other. But he said, when they came in and sat down and, I mean, stood at their place until they said grace and sat down to eat, and they were all so well-behaved, he says, I couldn't believe it. It couldn't all be this way. But he said, the second group was the same way, and the group you're with here is the same way. He says, I don't know how you did it. Do it. Well, I said, I had these kids for 23 days. I says, I think they know who's boss.
Yeah, right. Okay, that's fine, Andy. Okay, what about some of the programs and purposes of scouting?
Well, the purpose, of course, of scouting is citizenship training, character building, and physical fitness, and to get to live in the outer doors. And they may have a model of being prepared, and they have the idea of doing a good turn daily. And I think these are the things we follow mostly. It's really the backbone of scouting and what it works for. Maybe we'll be a little interested in how scouting is all financed.
Yes.
Well, on the unit level, the troop level or group, they're self-supporting. And each boy that joins the Boy Scouts has to pay a registration fee of $5. And each adult that is a volunteer pays that same registration fee. So the National Council receives those fees. We don't. All we do is they go through our office and are sent to the National Council. And then the Boy Scouts publish Boy's Life magazine, which shows some profit each year. And it's maybe one of the best and only real good youth magazines that's published. And then the Boy Scouts get large donations from people that are well financially off. Maybe just as an example, some years ago, Wade Phillips, Phillips Oil Company, gave the Boy Scouts his ranch in Cimarron, New Mexico. And he gave it to them with the idea that they'd use it. They could still operate it as a ranch that was raising thoroughbred cattle, but they would use it for a camp. It's in the mountains.
Oh, marvelous.
120,000 acres. Well, the Boy Scouts were a little reluctant to accept it at first because they thought it was a little bit too big a project for them to handle, and handle it financially successful,
yes,
and make it self-supporting. So to sweeten the pot a little bit, he gave him a 30-story building in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to office building. The income off of that office building was to supplement the cost of operating the camp for training. And at that camp, we have training for boys, and we also have about 5 or 6 training camps running each week for adults in this special field in scouting that they're interested in. So that's one of our larger training centers.
Mm-hmm.
And the Boy Scouts own three other camps. One of them is up at Ely, Minnesota, and that's a Voyager camp going out by canoe.
Oh, yes.
Up into the northern Minnesota and New Canada. It's pretty rugged. I've never been there, but they tell me after the first day out, you may never see another person until you come back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the National Council runs that. Then they have a camp in the Adirondack Mountains,
oh,
out east, mm-hmm, and they have a water specialized camp in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Those are run nationally. I might say, Bob, that a lot of people get the wrong idea just how the scouting program works, because they think the Boy Scouts own all these troops. The Boy Scouts don't have a Boy Scout troop of any kind. Actually, scouting is just a program. And it says to any group of people in any community, do you want to use this program for the youth in your community, your church, your school, or whatever it might be?
Mm-hmm.
We'll grant you a charter to use it. But the scout troop belongs to the sponsoring organization.
Oh, yes.
And they have to agree to certain things that they will furnish. They'll furnish a place for the troop to meet. They'll furnish the leadership for the troop. They'll furnish a committee of anywhere from 3 to 5 people to work with the scoutmaster between the service club or a church or whatever it is and the, mm-hmm, and the troop. And then the Boy Scouts agree to train these leaders. The leader doesn't have to have, we agree to train the leader.
I see.
And we agree to furnish them all the materials and the supplies to have it available for them. We don't handle the uniforms for the boys, those are handled by commercial stores, mm-hmm, like Strauss's and Farmenhauer's. Right. They're not a profitable item for these stores. So the Boy Scouts allow just a relatively small percentage of, mm-hmm, markup on the stuff. So they're not a, but they do teach the boys to come in and start trading in these,
yes,
stores, and that's why,
yes,
these stores will accept that. Now from a council level, to pay, like we have 15 area direct executives, and we have 3 other council executives. We employ 10 girls. We operate 4 offices. Fargo is the main one. We have one in Minot, one in Bismarck, and one in Grand Forks. To finance this, we get our members of United Funds in about 70 different communities.
I see.
And so we receive financial help from United Funds. It's worked out quite well. The only problem is that each year with inflation, the cost of operating the program goes up. It used to be that we used to get about 40% more or more of our income from United Funds. Now that has dropped back to about 25% because the United Funds have taken on more organizations to sponsor.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's harder for them to keep raising their budget each year.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to go out and raise the rest of the money to support the program ourselves. And the biggest support we have other than United Funds is what we call sustaining membership. And that's people like you or I who are interested in scouting and will make a donation, substantial donation to the Boy Scouts.
Is that a specific figure, or?
No, but it starts at $100 and on up.
Okay.
And then we have what we call a family enrollment. And that's for the parents. Now this is a little bit newer relatives with an additional chance to raise money. And we were kind of forced into it because by the United Funds, because when we appear before them and ask for our support, they want to know what the family of these boys are doing.
Oh, yes.
But the family, of course, pays for the boys' uniforms and pays to send the boys to camp.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about camp. We operate three camps in the summertime, one at Hart Butte, one up at Minnegoshi on the Canadian border, and one near Park Rapids. That's called Wilderness Camp.
Oh, yes.
Well, we united the four councils that were in North Dakota and Minnesota in this area into one. Mm-hmm. We ended up with four camps. We sold one of those and put the money in a trust fund.
Mm-hmm.
And we operate the other three. Minnegoshi has about 1,200 acres. Wilderness has 2,400 acres.
Mm-hmm.
Hart Butte, we don't own the land. We own the buildings because we built them, but the land belongs to the government.
Mm-hmm.
We lease it from the Interior Department.
Okay.
And while we're talking about finance, we might bring up the fact that the Boy Scouts are not supported by government funds in any way. It's a self-supporting program all the way through. And my job now, 2 years ago, after being in 50 years, I decided it was somebody else's turn. I think I had held every office on the district level, which at that time was Clay, Becker, and Nomenomen counties. And then, including being chairman of the district. Then as chairman, I became a member of the executive board of the council, and I moved up onto the council, and I served on their executive board, and I headed several committees there, and I ended up being president of the council for 2 years. That was the time that the office building in Fargo was built. That was my project during those 2 years, and so we...
Now
I serve as...
Treasurer.
As an advisor to the executive board, and I serve on the finance committee. And I think maybe Bob, my biggest job is going to the office about every other day to sign checks.
And how many checks did you say, Tommy?
Well, there's about $1 million goes through our office every year. This is registrations and camp money that comes in. So a lot of the money comes in and from some particular purpose that goes out.
Mm-hmm.
And then our regular operating budget.
Do you think, Andy, that Boy Scouting is just as active in Moorhead, say, now as it was 30 years ago? Are there as many boys?
I would not say 30 years ago, but I was 20, 25 years ago, yes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's doing pretty well because there's a lot more competition
from
these boys' time.
Right.
With school and athletics and all the other programs. And we notice after a boy's been to camp a couple of 2 years and he's becomes 15 or 16, well, his main interest then that next summer, instead of going to camp, is to take driver's training course so he can drive the family car. So, you know, you run into these type of... And the families go camping more now than they used to before.
Right.
Well, they have campers, they have mobile homes, so they do some camping on their own. And then, right now, the boy population is down. We don't have as many boys to draw on as we used to have. Boy population is down considerably.
Mm-hmm.
But our percentage of boys that we serve keeps going up.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that they have a large increase in membership is just that there's less boys to serve.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Is there anything else you'd like to tell the people in the future here, Andy, about Moorhead Scouting?
Well, maybe just one little comment that I would make. A lot of people ask me, well, how come you've been in scouting so long? And I think Herman Stern, who I always considered was one of the greatest men in our area that lived in Valley City, He and I were traveling to Dallas, Texas one time to a national meeting. And he says, where do you meet nicer people to work with and to make friends with? And I think that's true. And I think I enjoy the company of the people that I've been working with. And I think maybe that's why I have stayed in as long as I have.
Mm-hmm. And you've enjoyed being with the young people.
Yes, although where I'm serving now, I hardly ever see a Boy Scout. Mm-hmm. It's handling finances, it's handling personal problems, personnel, and money for camps and all this type of thing. In fact, unless I get invited to a Corner of Honor, which I do get invited a lot of times, that's the only time I ever get a chance to see a Boy Scout. Mm-hmm. But somebody has to do that type of work too. So
right.
Mm-hmm. I've had a chance to do both.
What are some of the fundraising things that they do in Fargo-Moorhead? The Scouts.
Boy Scouts?
Yeah.
Well, once each year they have a scout show. It's usually held in a gym or like they've been up here at MS several times. The tickets they sell are for a dollar. The boys sell the tickets.
Mm-hmm.
And the money is split between the boy and his troop and the council. So that way a boy gets a chance to earn part of the money to go to camp. The troop gets a chance to earn some money for some of their camping, other camping trips and that type of thing. So, and then you'll find once in a while a scout troop is putting on a pancake breakfast, a spaghetti dinner, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Those are individual troop shows. Now, any troop that wants to put on a financial benefit of some kind for their troop, or if they want to sell candy bar boxes or something like that, they have to have permission from the council. Mm-hmm. To do it. And there are very strict regulations on it. Whatever you're selling has to be worth the price that the public is paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't wear their uniforms when they're out selling.
Oh.
That's not allowed. You can't commercialize on the uniform.
I see. So if someone came in from Timbuktu, they wouldn't know whether a scout was involved in this project or not unless they
Well,
told.
Usually the boy will tell you he's selling it for his scout troop or something. Okay. They can do that.
Okay.
But they can't put on their uniform and go mm-hmm. out and do it.
Mm-hmm.
They can't commercialize on the uniform.
Okay. What about this award that the boys can earn in the churches, like in the Lutheran church?
Each church, each denomination, Protestant, Jewish, and Catholic, have an award that a boy who belongs to their church can earn. An Altare Dei Award is called, or something similar to that. They receive a medal for it. To earn this, they have to become involved in church activities, and they have to carry on some type of project in a church, which requires X number of hours of service to their church, and then they can work for this award. And that's in all of the, now there's an award for adult leaders by the churches also.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not something that you go out and earn, it's something you're selected to receive.
I see.
The same as I do hold the St. George Award from the Catholic Diocese of Crookston. Was given to me by the bishop for my activities in scouting.
Right, and these programs, then the church sets up the program. The scouting organization as such doesn't have too much to say.
We have a Catholic committee on scouting. We have a Protestant committee on scouting. We don't have a Jewish committee on scouting in our council because we only got one Jewish religious church in Fargo. That's the only one in the state of North Dakota. But we have a committee. They recommend the adults who are to receive this award.
And then also on the scouts that are involved, it is really a church program.
Yes.
That the scout does.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And it's organized and it's directed by a committee of scouters in that particular church.
All right. That sounds good, Andy. Maybe it's about time to wind things up, unless you have another little anecdote that you can tell us or a little bit of information that you might think is important. Can you think of anything?
Well, one thing I think it is remarkable, the number of people that adults that serve in scouting. Especially, I found that out because I did represent our council on the National Council for 6 years, and I attended 6 national meetings throughout the United States. And the number of influential people that really back the Scout program. I recall back when I was in Pittsburgh, the fellow that was, at that time I was president of the council here, the gentleman that was president of the council there was the vice president of United Steel for production. He went on to become the president of United Steel, and he went on to become chairman of the board. He's retired now.
Mm-hmm.
But he was serving the same job in Pittsburgh that I was serving here. And I had breakfast one morning with Tom Watson and his wife, who was the president of IBM. I've sat in roundtable discussions with some of the Firestones.
Oh, interesting.
The caliber of people that you meet in the scouting program is, on a national level, is really something.
That's wonderful.
And I think we have very dedicated scouters in our own area. I mentioned Herman Stern because Herman had been recognized by our council for his work in scouting. He was recognized by the region. He was recognized at a national meeting in Hawaii. When I found out he was going to be recognized, I made it a point to get there myself.
Mm-hmm.
He was recognized nationally. Another man I might mention that's been very active in scouting is Al Hartle.
From Otter Tail Power Company.
He was president of Otter Tail Power Company. He served as our council president. He served for about 4 years on the national council. Well, Al had to go to New York about 4 times a year, every 3 months for a board meeting. Or maybe it was held someplace else, not necessarily New York, but most of them were. That's all at his own expense, because we don't have enough money to pay for somebody to go represent this council at these meetings. When I go on something, it's on my own expense.
And really, the person is dedicated.
Yeah. And you look back when Al was president of Otter Tail Power, and of course, being a dedicated scouter that he was, the people that worked for him became dedicated scouters too. At one time there was an article published about Al in our National Scouting Magazine, which every adult later gets. He had 120 people in his organization that were involved in scouting in one place or another in all these different communities where Otter Tail Power served.
Mm-hmm.
And when one of those fellows served as scoutmaster and he needed a week off to go to camp with the boys, he didn't have to take his vacation time, or he didn't have to go without pay for a week. The company gave him time off to devote to scouting.
Nice.
So when Al Hartle was president of Otter Tail Power, we sure got a lot of good support from all the people of Otter Tail Power.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
And that works out in many different cases.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I want to thank you very much, Andy, for this interview on behalf of the Heritage Commission here at Morehead State University. Thanks a lot again.
We're glad to be here, Bob.
Good.